Hello and welcome to the True Blue LA podcast. First playoff edition in the round where 80% of the teams made it. Two of them are the Dodgers and the Brewers, and we're going to talk about the series coming. Three-game series. Are you excited for a team that won, whatever it was, 71% of their games to have to play a three-game series in the wild card round?
Yeah, I just talked to you, Jacob. What are you doing?
Literally less than 24 hours ago.
I remember one of the postseasons where we were doing like a bunch of podcasts. Like it seems like this is a quicker turnaround than we've ever done in recording a podcast. But yeah, I am excited because it's the playoffs. But at the same time, it's like it's this whole year's weird. So it's going to be weird, and I think that's on some level you just have to embrace the weirdness, even though it's probably bad. Yeah.
So we're going to preview the series. We're not exactly sure the frequency we'll do those, assuming the Dodgers keep winning, obviously. In this case, we're just going to do the preview for this, and then we'll talk to you when the series is done. Hopefully the preview, the NLDS. But just in case, hedging our bets there a little bit, but we're going to preview the series. You have a Dodgers rewind for us, even though you didn't have one yesterday in a more regular episode. And then we're cover all our bases. We're going to talk about the roster. We're going to talk about the Brewers, and we'll do all of that after this. Brewers. The Dodgers and the Brewers have met fairly recently.
Yeah, on some level, this is a rematch of the NLCS of 2018.
A great NLCS.
Yeah, that was a really good NLCS, and the Brewers had the better record that year between the two teams. And this year, they do not. the same managers though, because it's essentially the two longest tenured managers in the National League now. Don Mattingly with the same team. So like yeah, Don Mattingly and the Marlins and Dave Roberts with the Dodgers started in 2016, but technically Mattingly was hired a month before Roberts, but Craig Counsell was hired in May of 2015 before that. So he is the longest tenured manager in the National League. That's kind of funny.
That's weird. Yeah.
both former Dodgers players. That's something. They're so like old friend alerts, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, the Brewers, they're 29-31, and along with the Astros, who did not have access to any signs this year, they were 29-31. The two first two losing record teams to be in the playoffs, but obviously it's because of the system. There's 16 teams this year. The more interesting thing to me was if you look at Milwaukee's schedule, they were never above 500 at any point during the season. So like imagine a scenario where they win game one, which is Wednesday. That would be the first time their record, I mean, it'd be 1-0, but that'll be the first time all year they've had a record over 500. So it's very weird. I looked though, they were 1-1, 2-2, and 3-3. It would have been kind of awesome if they just kept that up the entire year, but they waited to go until they got to 10-10, and then 26-26, and then 27-27, but they couldn't quite finish off 30-30. So it's a weird year. They had a negative 17 run differential. I actually forgot what the Dodgers is. It was really the Dodgers were plus 136, which in a 162 game season, that's like a really good run differential. Like you're outscoring your opponents like almost a run a game, but they did that in 60 games, which is ridiculous. So they outscored their opponents by over two runs a game, so obviously a huge gap there. In September, the Brewers played a little better. They were exactly 500. They had a plus 11 run differential. So this whole season is small sample, but so you kind of have to parse some of this like a little bit. But yeah, it's just weird. Against left-handed pitching, the Brewers were, like, good offensively. They had a 105 weighted runs created plus. Against righties, though, they only had an 83. That's just a terrible WRC plus. But if you look, like, in September, they got a little better. They're like, 99, which is, you know, right at league average. A couple of the late additions they had in the last month. Tyrone Taylor, I can't remember if he's actually still technically a rookie. He played a little bit last season, but he kind of has played a lot of outfield for them in September. He's a right-handed hitter, but he's just been hitting sort of everyone. And it's sort of a typical, like, 2020-type line. .237, only a .293 on base, but he slugged .500, so like that's, you know, it's worth something. But 117 WRC plus against righties, and most of that time is in September. They acquired Daniel Vogelbach to basically DH. Now he's hit .328, .418, .569 with the Brewers. Now that's only in like 67 plate appearances, so again, small sample. This is his third team this year. He was with the Mariners and the Jays, and he was 5-for-57 with them. So like, if overall, right, like the last couple years ago, he was like 95 OPS plus. Last year, he was 111 in a full year. He's like right around 100, I think, this year. I don't have it in front of me, just overall on the season. And that's kind of where he is. But the thing is, like, he has a leg injury right now. So we don't know if he's playing, but like Walker Buehler starting in game one. So I think they're going to do everything in their power to like get him in that lineup. But Craig Counsell today was saying it's important that he's in the lineup. Counsell was pretty like cagey today a little bit. I listened to his interview with reporters. And what did he say? Like, I guess, so today was essentially an off day. It's like it is for the Dodgers, and a bunch of the Brewers were getting treatment, and like, he didn't really want to reveal much until like that was all sort of solved, because they have a couple pitchers that are sort of injured as well, and they're sort of figuring that out. But that's kind of where the Brewers are at right now. The pitching is their like biggest strength, and mm-hmm. then you know so much was talked about like the Reds as a potential like tough opponent for anyone really, but like they have like three really good starting pitchers and they didn't really hit much, but like that's like in a playoff series, a short playoff series, that can make a difference. So like it was almost the same for Milwaukee. Like they had Corbin Burns, he had a 2.11 ERA, 2.03 FIP, 88 strikeouts in just under 60 innings, but he has an oblique injury, so he's completely out the series. Brandon Woodruff is also excellent, 3.05 ERA, 3.20 FIP, 91 strikeouts. So he also homered off Kershaw in the NLCS in 2018. He will not bat this series, so perhaps that's a win for the Dodgers. He could match up against Kershaw in game two. That would be regular rest for him. Now, Council, again, was cagey on this, so Woodruff started Saturday for the Brewers, so game one would be 3 days rest. Council was like, I will guarantee he's starting a game, but he didn't want to say yet which game. So it seems like the more likely starters, just like skipping ahead a little bit. So, well, they could do a bullpen game, which I guess Brent Suter could be starting that. Like, he's a lefty. And he made some spot starts for them. He's probably starting a bullpen game in game one or game three, just given how their rotation is set up. And, like, you know, the Dodgers were susceptible early on in the season to lefties. They improved greatly as the season wore on. Like, I think we talked about this earlier, but they were well under 100 WRC plus against lefties. They were winning games, but not really hitting well, but a lot of that was batted ball stuff. They ended up with a 113 WRC plus, which is above average, one of the better numbers in the league, but they were 126 against righties, so it's still like they're lessened, but not bad against lefties. But so the in the bullpen, the Brewers have Brent Suter, Josh Hader, who's their closer, and then Alex Claudio as lefties. So like, if they get creative with like a bullpen type game, those would be a lot of the names you would see. Now, Hader, like, he's fine. Like, you know, he's really good. He gave up like 8 hits all year. He had a homer binge a little bit in September, where his numbers got a little bit up. So, but he's still like really good, and I expect him to, you know, obviously be a factor. But their biggest name in the Milwaukee bullpen is rookie Devin Williams. There was an article on him in The Athletic this week where his changeup, they named it the Airbender, which is one of the great like nicknames of anything in like baseball. And he struck out, he faced 100 batters exactly. He struck out 53 batters. Jacob, do you know what his strikeout rate was this year?
Was it 53%?
You know what? It was. Hey. You nailed it. So he was really good. He pitched 27 innings. He gave up one run. So 0.33 ERA, but his FIP was 0.86. His strikeout rate is a record. I think his K per nine is also a record. It was almost 18, which is just dumb. So he'll be a handful. He's a righty, but that's sort of their how Milwaukee will attack you, like pitching wise. Now there could be a couple old friends in play. Brett Anderson started Sunday but left early. He has a blister, much like Walker Buehler did, but obviously Buehler's a little bit further removed from his, so he might not even be on the roster. Brett Anderson. And like it stands to reason, like if he's pitching, unless it's like a short thing for a bullpen game, he's probably not going till game three. But then there's also Josh Lindblom, who came back from overseas this year to sign with the Brewers. He's had like an up and down year. His ERA is over five. He had a couple really good starts just heading into the last weekend, and then he only went 2 1/3 on Friday. He'd be on regular rest to go game one if they went traditional starters. So something to look for. He was still like just generally fine, but like that would be kind of a fun little sidebar to the series.
Sort of the other connection between the Brewers and the Dodgers, and I remember this was really the case last year. Both of the players we're about to talk about, but also just the regular season series. There we go. Last year between the Dodgers and Brewers was a lot of fun. Two really good teams, specifically the best player on each team last year. We have Yelich and Bellinger, the two last MVPs. Both kind of had off years.
Remember last year too, they had like early in the season, I will credit MLB for this, they did like the marketing campaign of like who's going to be MVP this year, Yelich or Bellinger. Mm-hmm. And keep in mind, Bellinger was only like, he was a great like 4 weeks into his season, but like that was a gutsy call to have that as a marketing thing, you know, like, and he could have obviously faded, but he did not. He won the MVP. Yelich was sort of in line till he got hurt to win a second one, but they've had like very similar years. Like right now, well, Yelich, he finished the season hitting 205. Like he had a 356 on base, 430 slugging. That's fine. 12 home runs. Like, it's always funny, right? Like 12 home runs in 60 games, that's a 32 home run pace over a mm-hmm. full season. So it's not like you look at that and go, wow, what a shitty hitter, you know? Like, but like, and so Bellinger also hit 12. It's just funny, like, to be like, wow, what a down year. You only hit 32 home runs. It's wild. Yelich walked a bunch. He also struck out a bunch. He walked 46 times. But yeah, he had the weird start where he was 5 for 44 to start the year. But then I looked, like, he was 11 for 59 to end it. Like, so it's been like sort of this, like, he had stretches. Bellinger was the same way, very streaky. He ended up actually with more decent numbers than I would have expected given a couple weeks ago. He was 239, 333, 455 on the year. Similarly to Yelich, he was 5 for 36 to start. And then into September, Bellinger didn't have an extra base hit in his first 13 games of the last month. But then starting with the series at Coors Field,
rejuvenate like a trip to Coors Field.
And it was one of those things where, like, at first it's like, okay, was that just a Coors Field thing?
Right.
But he sort of kept it up the last week. Like, he kept hitting doubles.
Yeah, and that's a thing we've seen from time to time where they, you know, you kind of get the, you get going a little bit. You know, who knows if that's an actual thing or not, but it was good to see in this case.
Yeah, what's always like a thing with Bellinger, you're always like watching his swing or like mm-hmm. how he looks. Because he could look really bad, right? Like, it's not like feast or famine, like Jock necessarily. But, like, there's times where you're like, oh, God, he's just out of it right now. Like, but, yeah, so, like, he looked really good. But he was 11 for 28 the last nine games, 5 doubles, 2 homers. So he walked, like, 10 times, too. So he's had over 550 on base percentage the last week and a half. So that was good. So the final OPS plus numbers for both, Bellinger 113, Yelich 111. So it's funny, like I said, Yelich hit 205, and he still had a 111 OPS plus. So they do a lot of things to help you win. They're not bad. But, like, it'd be funny, like, as we've seen, like, Max Muncy's in the same boat. Jock Peterson's in the same boat. You know, the counter starts at zero, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's going to be an interesting series, and those two, I'm sure, will factor in, very mightily.
So before you have a trivia question for me, and it's one that's frustrating to me, and we'll talk about it in a bit. We should talk about the roster. This is weird. This should be, you would think, one of the easier years to sort of predict the playoff roster, unlike every other year we've ever done this, where you're going from September rosters of up to 40 players to a contracted series 25-man roster, which is just can be difficult to do, especially when there's usually one or two call-ups that kind of really impressed and shake up what was maybe the August roster. We're going from 28 to 28 here, so that should be easy. And if it weren't for some comments from Dave Roberts, I actually think it would be easy. But earlier this week, I guess late last week, I should say, Dave Roberts came out and said that they're only going to carry 12 to 13 pitchers, which is weird. Certainly not what you and I were expecting.
No, yeah, like you're saying, like, so going into, okay, so I guess this was technically when Jock was still on the emergency family medical leave list, but we knew he was coming back, and Bueller was still on the IL, but we knew he was coming back. So it was, I think, about 10 days before the end of the year, I was thinking the Dodgers' 28-man roster now is their 28-man playoff roster, essentially, right? Like, maybe one, give or take, one revision.
Sure.
And but then Roberts was like, you know, it's hard to, like, you have to lead into it sometimes, because talking to Dave Roberts every day, you don't want to be like, so who are your pitchers, you know, for the first round. Like, you have to, like, sort of ease into it with, like, different questions, talk around it, like, the more, like, style. So over the last week or so, he's sort of revealed a few things that are revelatory about that, but the big one was, he was saying, you know, in the wild card round, because it's only three games, he's going to use 12 or 13 pitchers, and then that's what they're sort of figuring out. And I think, like, we both sort of agree, it's safe to assume that there's no way they're only taking 12. And, like, even 13 seems like a low number.
Especially when you just look at who they would be adding on the bench. I have a bunch of question marks there, and then I have extra names on the pitching stuff.
So, so before we get fully into who the pitching cuts are going to be, let's just say this. Through question and answer the last few days, Gonsolin, May, and Urias are all on the roster. That was obviously, I think that was a legitimate question in that, say, had they chosen, say, Gonsolin to start game three, they haven't revealed that yet, but, like, let's say they choose Gonsolin to start game three, you could say, like, well, Urias, they've used in the bullpen more than May just in the past. You could see a scenario where they might leave May off the roster. Like, I wouldn't agree with that, but you could see, like, the thought process behind it in a short series. But, like, that's not going to be the case. So it's essentially it's five starters and then eight relievers, even though two of the starters are relievers.
I'll put it this way. I'm still giving that a non-zero possibility. It's a low number, but
so backing into that a little bit. So you have the 13 position players, which are fairly set. Now, Roberts has said multiple times that Edwin Rios is on the playoff roster. And that seemed obvious to me for some time now.
He was getting a lot of leverage at bats throughout the year.
But he explicitly said it, yes, Robert. Right. Like this, so it's like, okay, that's good. Now, he did not commit to Gavin Lux.
Mm-hmm.
This is where it gets weird, is because they need to add position players, not take them away. So, like, you're like, now it's fair. Like, they're like committed right now to Chris Taylor and AJ Pollock essentially starting every day. I would say, and they have not committed to starting Jock Peterson every day. Like, they were saying, like, they were going to give him some run the last week, but Dave Roberts said, you have to perform. And, like, I don't think I would say Jock's probably going to start against righties, but it's not guaranteed as it might be.
And as we've talked about, it also will kind of depend on the DH situation with the catchers. If they do go with, say they do start a righty in game two, and the Brewers do, and they commit to Austin Barnes is Clayton Kershaw's catcher, and they commit to that in the postseason, Will Smith is DHing.
Right. And then that means So that means you're sitting like AJ Pollock probably,
right?
For Jock, and AJ Pollock's been hitting better. So that's a legitimate question. I do think still, like, it's not. I don't think they would leave Jock off the roster necessarily.
I agree.
Again, it's like they need to get up to 15.
Is there a world where like they maneuver it where Muncy doesn't start? That's the only other roster configuration I could think of where
I don't think so either.
But
he's the one they've committed to the most. Like in terms of like he's batted like cleanup a lot, even when his numbers have been bad. He's still like he's been like locked in terms of like the count like all year. He's still taking his walk, so I think that's part of it. He's not always truly lost. He's been hurt at different times, or you know, nagging stuff, and it's probably affected him more than they probably would have admitted at the time.
And it's like, not like Jock is banging on the door demanding to get a start.
Right.
So yeah, I agree.
But I think Muncy's like locked in. He's basically clean up.
Okay.
But so it comes down to the question of like, now the other sort of wrinkle in this is like, we've asked about like they're probably going to carry a third catcher, and it would be Kaber Ruiz in the last. But Roberts was like, you know, it's more likely in the longer series they would do that. So like the division series and then the championship series and World Series, if they move on, he said that it is. Now it makes sense, you know, conceptually. But then you're like, if you're not adding Ruiz, like, that means essentially the only way you get to 15 position players is by adding both Matt Beaty and Zach McKinstry. And it's like at this point, like, I get it. Like, you know, Beaty didn't have the best year. But, like, you could say, fine, like, adding Beaty, like, if they're going to pinch hit. But they don't really pinch hit. Like, you know, like, it just doesn't happen. Like, it might happen a little more often because it's the postseason. But you can make the argument that Ruiz is the best bat of those three, like even if you're just adding an extra bat, not as like a, you know, a quote unquote third catcher, or it gives you a little more freedom to maneuver Smith around. But that's where it gets weird. Like that's where you're sort of thrown for a loop as to why they might only carry 13 pitchers. It's like, who, I guess then it becomes like, okay, are they like, are they really considering like Terrence Gore? There's not going to be the extra inning rule, so games could just go on. But like that means you're going to put him in games, and then he might have to bat. You know, like I think they still value like overall like what a guy brings, and they haven't necessarily shown the willingness to like just use a roster spot for someone so limited. I guess they could. They certainly could, and it's not – they have room. But, like, that would be surprising, I think.
Yeah, so should we throw some names out? Do we want to move to pitchers? And another thing I want to say, they could carry 14 pitchers, right?
Oh,
that is
right.
Entirely a possibility.
Well, and then let's just say this. Like, so we noted this on Sunday. Adam Kolarik played the last two innings because of the lack of expanded rosters. They were already resting Bellinger and Betts. They took out Turner and Muncy after like five or six innings because they were both dealing with stuff. And then at that point, they didn't have bench players, and they wanted to take Corey Seager out after the seventh. So they're like, let's just put Kolarik in right field, and they maneuvered guys around. So he played the last two innings in right. So if you want to be technical, like you mentioned this before the podcast, Kolarik could be technically a position player on the roster. And so that's how they get to only 13 pitchers, so maybe that's the case. But so I mean, so the offense is like, it's a pretty like clear path. It's essentially what McKinstry, Beaty, Ruiz are. They're adding two of those three, and with a slight possibility that Terrence Gore, you know, but like that's kind of it. So now it's just a matter of what pitchers get cut.
So the easy start, assuming Dustin May doesn't get left off, it's Kershaw, Buehler, Gonsolin, May, Urias, Jansen, McGee, Trinan, and then we get into the, like, hypothetically you could talk, maybe these people don't make it, but wouldn't think so. Floro. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, Floro, they've used him in, like, circle of trust type
yes.
games, like situations more recently. So I would say he's in.
I would say I would put him and Baez in the same camp of like, I'm not 100%, but I'm pretty close to 99, 98.
Oh yeah, like Baez he's a made man.
Yeah.
At this point.
So that leaves us with you're gonna enjoy this. We have Kolarik, Victor Gonzalez, and Joe Kelly. To make two spots. Gratterall, he's in my list. Sorry. I skipped over his name.
Okay. You say Gratterall, Kolarik, Alex Wood, and who was the other one that is your... Joe Kelly.
Yes. In my mind, there's no way Alex Wood is making this roster.
I sort of agree with that. Now,
I don't want to say no way, this. Who knows, but...
Roberts was asked about this over the weekend, and he said, like, he was sort of saying, like, what he does well, like, what his role might be, and it's like, get a left or right out, could go multiple innings, but then, like, stop short of saying, like, you know... more like we'll see what happens.
And I feel like they gave him a shot to down the stretch in that last week, and he performed not well.
Yeah. So okay. So that means we're essentially.
When going into this, I not with 100%, but I would be surprised if Alex Wood made it, and I would be surprised if Brusdar did not.
Yeah. Now.
So in my mind, that leaves Joe Kelly, Victor Gonzalez, and I'm a cleric. Before we see if you adjust any ways, do you know who the three leaders of ERA plus for the Dodgers are this season?
Oh.
It's Adam Kolarik, Victor Gonzalez, and Joe Kelly.
Okay. So. Yeah, I'm looking at this like. Okay. Trinan, Jansen, McGee, Floro, Baez. Like the five. In and then okay no I had it right I was like I was I wrote it down just to write it down so sure. I could look at it
yeah.
And then so like there's okay the five starters, those five relievers, and then picking three of the five. And so you're saying Gratterall, Kolarik, and Victor Gonzalez are your
that's who I would assume. Yes.
Okay, so in my head, like, the way Dave Roberts has talked about Joe Kelly is as, like, so very clearly a key member of the bullpen, right?
And this is what we're talking about. It's so easy if they just make it 14 pitchers.
Yes. that's weird. So the only thing I could say, like, Joe Kelly's been, like, really weird since he's come back. He's throwing, like, all curveballs.
He's always been really weird. But
and then it comes down to, like, has he really been good? Like... Like he has a freaking mural of him in Los Angeles. Like, why? Like, how does this happen? Like, I know why. Like, you know, because people hate the Astros. But really? Like, how did he get to this point? I guess is the weird thing. But, so yeah, I'm kind of with you. I could see a scenario where, Victor Gonzalez, that he gets the.
This is the first time since the season's ended that I'm looking at everyone's numbers. Based on just all numbers told, he should make it. Third in whip, leads in fifth.
Like he's been, and they've been increasing, like, his roles.
Right.
Like, and he's done very, very well. And so I guess it could be a scenario where, because they've optioned Kolarik a couple times, you could see a scenario where Gonzalez makes it over Kolarik, and then Kelly's in. So that's how you get to 13 instead of 14, I guess. But yeah, it'd be a surprise if Wood makes it. And I think Kelly, if they deem him healthy,
generally have, to my fault, just generally based on sort of stuff, liked Alex Wood. And if the Dodgers, if we were talking about three struggling pitchers who needs to make it to kind of get that total up, sure, like, you could talk me into it. But we're talking about possibly leaving off, again, these really good pitchers who have performed this year. You know, maybe Joe Kelly is a little smoke and mirrors, but, you know, given the chance, it has in a very limited time, done well.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's going to be great. I mean, you're right. Like, we keep talking about this. The real solution is just carry 14 pitchers, right? Like, that's what you do. And then you could live with not, and then you don't add Ruiz, and then you basically decide. I would imagine they add Beatty
You add Ruiz, right?
Well, right, exactly. Yeah. But like, you could see a scenario where like they're like, Beatty's our bat guy, and so we're adding him, and then next round maybe it's Ruiz in place of Beatty, almost maybe, you know, and then that's when you might drop one of the pitchers, but. If it's 14 or whatever, but like, yeah, so it's weird. That's why, like, they didn't fully match up, like with all the statements, like, how are they getting to 28? Like, so there is the possibility of that, like the wild card, like you said, like, they could add Terrence Gore, you know, they, maybe they're only carrying 12, 13 because they're not convinced that Joe Kelly's fully healthy. So yeah, maybe that's all part of this, but. That'll be the interesting. The rosters aren't due till Wednesday morning. It's 10 a.m. in the city of game one. So that we'll know by Wednesday morning what the rosters are. And I'm sure Roberts will talk about it on Tuesday. But yeah, today was an off day for both teams, really. And the Dodgers didn't really do anything. So kind of a low key day here.
All right, it's trivia time, real quick before we go. Just when we're talking about how great the Dodgers pitching staff has been, they had. Of 21 pitchers, only 3 had an ERA plus below 100.
So Ross Stripling.
Yeah.
76. Trombones. Let me think here. Wow. Oh. Okay, so Mitch White didn't really give up anything. Neither did Spores.
Mm-hmm.
Spores
had the 220. Mitch White doesn't have one because he didn't give up a run. Yeah.
All right. Wow. Okay, hold on. Oh, Blake Treinen?
No, Blake Treinen is the lowest above 100 at 111.
Oh, did Baez recover?
He did.
Okay.
135.
Then I'm stumped right now.
Alex Wood, 68. Oh, lowest
of course.
On the team.
Yes,
and,
I should have, yeah.
Dennis Santana.
Ah, that's the one I was forgetting. Yeah, he had a nice little run, and then he didn't.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, you have a trivia question for me.
Okay, so like I said, these teams met just 2 years ago for the right to go to the World Series. Milwaukee had home field advantage, but the Dodgers won. In a series that Clayton Kershaw closed out in Game 7, that happier bullpen time in the playoffs. So in that NLCS, there were 4 different players on the Dodgers and Brewers who drove in 4 runs, which tied for the lead in the series. How many can you name?
We'll find out after this.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Name the RBI leaders between both the Dodgers and Brewers in the 2018 NLCS.
I'll give you a hint.
Yeah.
There's 2 on each team.
You know, that's what I was figuring.
I'll give you another hint.
Oh, good.
Only 2 of the players are currently on these teams.
Damn it. My number. Maybe we'll get there. I am struggling to remember, other than some obvious names, who it could have been on the Brewers' side. I play a lot of trivia. I play bar trivia. I'm the sports guy on my trivia team. I know a lot, in theory, about the Dodgers. And yet, I'm still going to bomb this. That's just age, I guess. Stuff that early, you know, 10 years ago, maybe I would remember.
You're a dad now. Your brain is clogged.
But it's also a series. It's also a series that I don't remember. I remember Chris Taylor's catch. I remember the pitching. I remember that whole opening, not fiasco, but like the sort of drama behind that. But there's not like an individual offensive performance that is like super sticking out. But I have some names. So two aren't there. All right. Crap. we'll see how many I get. I have 4 to 5 names written down. If I just start missing, I'm probably giving up. Chris Taylor,
until you said it, I forgot about his catch, and that was a great catch. He only drove in one for the series, but he hit 364, 8 for 22, 462 on base, 500 slugging. So great series.
Okay, that tracks. I remember he had a good series, but couldn't remember quite the RBIs. Yasiel Puig.
Yes. Now Puig should have won NLCS MVP. He did not. But Puig hit 333, 364, 619. He also had the home run in Game 7 that put the game away, essentially.
That is why he's on this list. I remember that.
Yeah, and that like, and then it was only a few days, about a week before what should have been his 2 indelible moments in Dodger history, but the other one got obviously erased by other stuff.
Yeah, other stuff.
Justin Turner. Justin Turner drove in 3. He had a key home run in the 8th inning of Game 2 that saved that game. The Dodgers would have been down 0-2 had he not done that. So obviously a key series. But
yeah, if you haven't noticed, I'm keen on key home runs that I remember that scored some. All right, I'm clearly just going to forget who won MVP and probably had the other. Did the MVP have the other 4?
Yes.
All right, and I'm just blanking, and I'm going to really hate myself. I'm going to move on to obvious Brewer names and then hate myself. Christian Yelich.
Yelich only drove in 1 run. He was 5 for 28 in the series. They effectively neutralized it.
One of the things I remembered was that both he and Bellinger had some down moments. Ryan Braun.
Braun had 4. Okay. Yes, he didn't have the best offensive numbers, but 4 RBIs, 241, 290.
That's a very Ryan Braun thing to do.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Okay, I'm tapping out. My memory's dumb.
Jesus Aguilar also drove in 4 for them. He homered and had 3 doubles. You mentioned his name. Cody Bellinger also had 4. He won NLCS MVP.
What were his final numbers? Like, what was his slash?
5 for 25. He hit 200, 231, 360, but he had a walk-off hit.
And I almost said him, but I remembered how bad he was. And I'm
one
like
of the worst MVP choices. Like, honestly, it was so bad. Like, literally, I mean, look, it's small sample, but like, Yasiel Puig's slugging was higher than Bellinger's OPS for the series. Like, so yeah, I don't
and it was it, okay, it's all flooding back to me. You know, he had the key sacrifice and the walk off in the extra innings game.
He had like two key moments in that series, still, that's it.
Yeah.
But you reminded me of the opener nonsense. Wade Miley that series started 3 games and pitched 10 innings. One of them was the one batter thing, you know, like so that was kind of weird, but I'm not a fan of all that, you know. I get there's advantages to it, but like that, the gamesmanship part of it where it wasn't really like, didn't really do much.
Yeah.
Like that was like, come on. But I did sort of enjoy that all the people who were like up in arms over it for like almost nothing, but it was just like, really, this is what you're doing? Like, I wasn't like mad at it, but it's just like, come on. Like,
it's really interesting that I didn't remember the MVP of that series. It sort of makes sense because I'm just so happy that they won and I'm kind of moved on this celebratory. I also that I at least remembered good performances, but what stuck out to me wasn't that he won MVP. It was that he had kind of a down series. I don't know what that says about me, but
yeah.
Hey, I got 2 of the names, right? I got 2. I'm happy.
You did.
All right.
Yeah, that's good. You did excellently. So the when I initially looked at the NLCS page, I was going to ask which player had the most hits for either team.
Uh-huh.
But that would have been way tougher. Both the top 2 were Brewers. I will just tell you. Manny Machado had 8 hits. So did Taylor. But Lorenzo Cain had 10. Orlando Arcia had 9.
Interesting.
In the series. So
Yeah. I might have said Chris Taylor might have been in that naming list. I have been a part of the Chris Taylor fan club for a while, so he's becoming more and more of a default sneaky answer for me.
You're the opposite of my brother who has not really texted me this year.
Oh, but
he almost
why.
Always text. Yeah, he always texts me like, "Oh man, Chris Taylor up in another big spot. He's going to strike out." You know, like even when he was like a multi-positional above average hitter for in his like two down years, right? Like quote unquote down years, and like he's just like hated him. It's just weird. And then this year he's been great and not a peep. So yeah.
All right, you've got a Dodgers rewind about a player who didn't make much of a peep of the Dodgers, and I'm excited to hear about it anyways.
So we didn't have one yesterday. It was a little bit of a end of season, and for me, rush preparation for the podcast. Mm-hmm. I didn't get it. Yeah, also, I'm lazy. But then I wanted to do one. I figured since we're going to record again today, I knew who I was going to do for this, and it's Jed Jerko. The Dodgers acquired him last July 31st, and it was with Cincinnati. If I remember correctly, they sent Tony Cingrani to Cincinnati in that deal and got cash. They also sent minor leaguer Jeffrey Abreu, but I believe that was a that took money off the Dodgers' luxury tax hit last year. So, like, it was like one of those, even if it doesn't work on the field, like, it was like a sort of a financial win. Not that that should be like the prime motivation, but it was like one of those creative deals where you're like, all right, I get it.
It basically was a part of the Mookie Betts deal. That's how I'm going to think of it.
Exactly right. Exactly right. They made room. So Jerko was only 5 for 36 with the Dodgers. He did have a game winning hit somewhere in there. So he could have in theory been an NLCS MVP had he made the postseason roster, but he didn't. He's going to be on the postseason roster for the Brewers this year, which would be the first for him. I'll get to that why that's important in a second. He hit this year 248, 333, 504 with 9 home runs. Most of his playing time was in September. He played a little bit early on. I can't remember if he was hurt or not. But his 121 OPS plus was the highest on the team, minimum 70 plate appearances. I made the cutoff there because Vogelbach, he's been really, really good for them, but only 67 plate appearances. But the fact that like Jerko's basically been their best regular for the whole year tells you something about their offense. He's mostly started at first base the last 4 weeks. But what makes me laugh about Jerko was, so last year I wasn't doing like team site stuff. I was just doing like national baseball stuff for SB Nation. And I was working in advance on something on the wild card game. And like the last couple weeks of the year, like the A's and the Rays were playing the Angels, so I got a few players on those teams to talk about stuff. I can't remember who else I talked to from people who played the Dodgers. I think the Rays also were there. So I got some visiting player stuff, and then I was going through, like, I just made a list of some of the Dodgers who had, like, previously played in the wild card game, and I had conflated a couple things, but a lot of times in, this is the before times when you could actually, like, be in a locker room. There's a lot of standing around because the players aren't always there. And it's just standing around and waiting if someone comes in and you get a chance to talk to them. And a lot of times you might not get to talk to anybody that day. Sometimes you might be waiting and you just sort of take who's there. And I saw Jerko sort of by himself in the corner. And I went to talk to him. And in my head, he was one of the players on my list who had played in the wild card game. So I went up to him and I was like, "So, like, what was your experience, you know, in the wild card game?" He's like, "You know, I could tell you, but I haven't played in one." I'm like, "Oh!" And then I just, like, it dawned on me immediately, and I was like, "Oh crap!" Like, so it's one of my bigger dummy reporter moments. Like, and I just completely, I just started laughing. I was like, "Yep, I biffed that one," you know. Like, and we talking about something else for like just a few moments, but I was so flustered, like I didn't really talk to him that long, and I was just like, what an idiot that I was for completely screwing that up. So he did not make it into my wild card story because he has not played in the playoffs before, nor has he played in a wild card game. But this year he's playing in the wild card series. So that's our Dodgers rewind today.
All right. So we're going to put a bow on this episode, but make sure our listeners know when the games are, where they can see them. I'm, who do not have cable, have to struggle to find a way to watch this now that MLTV ain't going to work?
So, no. You have to... I think it'll work... Oh, no, not for ESPN. It won't.
No.
So, ESPN has 7 of the 8 wildcard games. TBS has Rays Jays. Now, for future rounds, Fox and TBS, you can access it through MLB TV, but you have to be able to log in through your, like, cable provider.
Which I don't have, you know, but I do have an antenna, so Fox is okay. Fine.
Yeah, but some of those are, like, especially the NLDS is, like, FS1.
Screwed again.
You need the Dodgers to advance to the NLCS. And the World Series, so you can watch the game.
Basically. Yeah, I may pay for a month of, like, Sling TV or something.
I was that way last winter when I was sort of cycling through the free trials of Sling, YouTube TV, etc. They were kind of okay. But, so, this series, it's the ESPN family of networks, technically. So, game one, we know, Wednesday, 7 o'clock, ESPN. The Lakers Heat finals is 6 o'clock on ABC that night, so that's a rough ask for a lot of people. Tim Kirkjian, Eduardo Perez will be analyst, Carl Ravitch on the call for that series. Alden Gonzalez, local reporter, he's going to be sort of the sideline is not the way to put it, but like the reporter on the scene or whatever. So he'll be part of the broadcast too. The other games Thursday, Friday, we don't have times for yet. I would imagine the Dodgers still get later start times on those nights. ABC has an 11 a.m. slot Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, potentially, because ESPN covering 7 series, they have to farm out some of it somewhere. So I guess it's possible the Dodgers could be on ABC where you could see it.
Yay.
But like that, it's a stretch for me to think that they're going to play an 11 a.m. game locally. So I wouldn't bet on that. But then if it makes it to Friday for game 3, that'll be one of the ESPN StatCast alternate broadcasts. Again, not sure exactly where that's going to run. By Friday, there might only be a couple series left, so they might have room to put it on ESPN2. Otherwise, it might be like on ESPN, just online or ESPN+. But that's with the old friend Mike Petriello and then Jason Benetti on the call, who's wonderful. And Kyle Peterson is going to be the other analyst. So those are usually fun broadcasts. So that would be fun if it gets to game 3. But, the Dodgers would probably prefer taking care of business in the first 2 games and figuring it out. So that's where we're at. No questions from Craig this week, but it was fun having him yesterday. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We will talk to you after.